The history of Macedonia. Alexander the Great marches to Gordium, part two. Now, of course, the campaigns that he had been operating on in Asia Minor, Alexander led part of his column along a stretch of road to the coastline of Pamphylia. At one point, they waded through the surf, helped because the wind veered the normal direction and blew out the sea, making the water shallow enough for them to pass. Cleisthenes, nephew of Aristotle, who accompanied the expedition and wrote the first history of Alexander almost as soon as the event occurred, claimed that this was a sign of heavenly favor, and the story quickly grew into a miracle, with even the waves bowing before Alexander, just as Easterners did obeisance before the Persian king. Plutarch was dismissive, saying that Alexander made no mention of any of this in his letters, and simply stated that he marched along the coast. Just before this incident, he was said to have been encouraged when a spring came near Xanthus, threw up a bronze tablet inscribed in ancient languages. Conveniently, someone was on hand to translate, and even more conveniently, the text prophesied that Greeks would one day bring the Persian Empire to an end. However, there were other signs, and they were less welcome. Arrian says that during the siege of Halicarnassus, a chattering swallow flew around the king while he was taking a nap, finally perching on Alexander's head. A seer in the royal entourage interpreted this sign as a plot amongst the king's friends, but one that would be revealed. Arrian recounts the story as encouraging Alexander to believe accusations made during the winter against Alexander of Lysanthus, who had so publicly backed Alexander's claim to succeed the chaotic hours after Philip's murder, and thus avoided the fate of his brothers. Loyalty had been rewarded with more than being spared execution, most recently by placing him in charge of the Thessalian cavalry when their existing commander was made a satrap after the Battle of Granicus. Our sources contradict each other over major details of what happened in 333 BCE. Court intrigue, by its nature, is secretive, the truth known to few and readily distorted by gossip and deliberate fabrication. Arrian's version has Parmenio sending a message to Alexander along with a Persian named Sesenes. The latter had been arrested and confessed to carrying a letter from Darius to Alexander of Lysanthus, who had already contacted Darius via Macedonian exile at the Persian court. The Persian king offered to pay 1,000 talents in gold and help him become king of Macedonia if he assassinated Alexander. When consulted, the king's friends and advisors were not inclined to speak up for the accused, whether through genuine suspicion or personal dislike, or a sense that the man was already compromised, whatever the truth of the matter. Alexander decided to act, sending an officer disguised in local dress to Parmenio with verbal instructions. The accused man was stripped of his command and arrested, reigning a prisoner for 3 years. This was odd, for long-term captivity was rare in the ancient world, with execution or exile usually the immediate punishments, and may suggest doubt or lingering affection on the king's part. Arrian has all of this occurring while Alexander was at Phaselis during the winter, whereas Curtius and Theodorus place it much later in the year, after Alexander and Parmenio had rejoined their forces. Theodorus also claims that Olympias wrote to her son warning him not to trust Alexander of Lysanthus, while Curtius speaks of two accusers but doesn't name them. According to Curtius, Senesus had been at the Macedonian court since Philip's reign and was well trusted, only to be executed sometime later after he failed a test that had been staged to prove his loyalty. The conflicting traditions have allowed for much scope of speculation, while making it impossible to be certain about almost any aspect of the affair, other than we know that Alexander of Lysanthus was arrested and much later executed. Perhaps he had plotted to murder the king, since such conspiracies were common enough at the Argead court, although, as noted earlier, we do not know whether or not he was a member of the royal family and could seek to rule. On the other hand, Alexander may not have trusted him after executing both his brothers, and simply waited until it was safe to dispose of him under the pretext of treachery. Alternately, the king and his victim may both have been innocent, and the plot fabricated by someone else, whether to dispose of a rival or simply to prove loyalty, perhaps even by the Persians to encourage distrust amongst Alexander's officers. Parmenio has actually been suspected, although this is pure speculation, and we cannot see clear evidence that the arrest improved his status and position. Similarly, there is no hint of deterioration in the relationship between the king and Antipater back in Macedonia, who was Alexander of Lysias' father-in-law, either as a result of his arrest or eventual execution. So much depends on what we think Alexander was like, and even then there remains the puzzle of why someone was arrested, only to be kept alive and killed so much later, which suggests that the king was either unwilling to have the man killed or felt too weak politically to do it. Given the prevalence of assassination in the Argaid history, the easiest interpretation is that the man really was, or at least was believed, to be plotting, but easiest does not necessarily mean correct. Parmenio brought his troops to rendezvous with Alexander's column at Gordium in Phrygia, which makes Arrian's detailed account of the communication during the alleged plot more likely than the suggestions elsewhere that the affair happened after the army had reunited. By this time, it was well into the spring, probably late May 333 BCE, and also joining the army were the newly raised reinforcements and the men returning from winter leave in Macedonia, who had completed a round trip of almost 1,000 miles. The fresh troops numbered some 3,000 Macedonian infantry and 300 cavalry, along with 200 Thessalian horsemen and 150 from Elis. Around the same time, additional mercenaries also joined the army. Now, in the Temple of Zeus at Gordium was a yoked wagon, said to belong to Gordius, the father of Midas, the mythical founders of the dynasty that had ruled Phrygia, most recently as Persian representatives. The yoke was fastened by a cord of cornel bark, tied with a complicated knot that left no end visible. Legend, presumably local, and never mentioned in any surviving sources before Alexander's visit, proclaimed that whoever undid the knot would be the master of Asia. The young king was once again seized with a longing, at this time to see the sacred relic and meet the challenge. Aristobulus claimed that Alexander pulled out the pin fastening the wagon pole and was able to slide the yoke free. Everyone else said that he drew his sword and slashed through the knot, perhaps because this is far more dramatic of a story. It shows boldness and strength rather than cunning, more Achilles than Odysseus. Either way, he sacrificed to Zeus Basileus, Zeus the king, and the thunderstorm that raged that night was taken as the god's approval. It's a good story, especially in hindsight, and for Macedonians and Greeks who would not worry too much about whether or not there really was such a prophecy. There is no sign of a flood of envoys seeking alliance after hearing about it, but there was respect for the Macedonian forces. So we'll continue on this campaign next time. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arrian's The Campaigns of Alexander, In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood, The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.